I hope you've taken the time this morning to read the little biography of Moses that I put into the bulletin. If you did, you know that we consider Moses a hero on two counts. On the one hand, Moses is the deliverer. Now, I don't know if Marvel Comics has a deliverer in their stable of superheroes, but if they do not, they should, because Moses is a lot more interesting than Spider-Man or any of the Avengers that you'll be hearing about this summer. As a matter of fact, it was Moses to whom God spoke from the bush that burned with fire but was not consumed and said, "I am who I am." It was Moses whom God sent to the children of Israel saying, "Tell them I am sent you." It was Moses whom God sent to Pharaoh saying, "Let my people go." It was Moses who called down from heaven the 10 plagues upon the Egyptians and led the children of Israel out of Egypt and across the Yam Suf, the Red Sea, and into or to the borders of the promised land, destroying the armies of Egypt in that process. On the one hand, Moses is the deliverer. On the other hand, Moses is the lawgiver. It was Moses who gave us the 10 Commandments. It was a certain rabbi said, how can I forget that guy's name? I've got it right here in front of me. Man, I'm getting it. I've got to get this name right. It was Martin Buber who observed that Moses gave Israel just the right number of commandments to be remembered by counting them off on the 10 fingers of their 2 hands. Of course, Moses did not stop with the 10 commandments. By most counts, he gave more than 613 laws, commandments in ordinances. Now, let me tell you what, some of those laws seem quite mundane to us. Some seem absolutely sublime, and some seem outrageous. Now, let me take you to the most sublime. In Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18, Moses says, "Love your neighbor as yourself." And then for emphasis, "I am the Lord." Did you get that? Love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. In Romans, the 13th chapter, when St. Paul says that all the commandments, "Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal," and every other commandment can be summed up in a single sentence, "Love your neighbor as yourself." He quotes, of course, from Moses. And then one of the most shocking commandments is found in Deuteronomy, the 21st chapter, at least that gets my vote. In Deuteronomy, the 21st chapter, we read how if a man has a son who is stubborn and rebellious, and he will not listen to his father or his mother, even though they chastise him, the man is to lay hold of his son and take him to the elders of the city. And he is to say to them, "This my son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not listen to me. He is a glutton and a drunkard." And then the men of the city are to stone that son to death. Now, in all my years here, I've never had one of you come to me to say, "I would like to bring my disobedient and rebellious child to the Board of Elders that he or she might be stoned to death." But it's not outside the realm of possibility. Not long ago, I read about a man who was running this past year for the state legislature in the state of Arkansas. And his platform was that we should return to this commandment, which he viewed to be the Word of God, and to all others like it. And when I read that, I said to myself, well, I'm not sure that man is a Christian, and I'm relatively sure he's not a father. I don't think he's a Christian, because if he were a Christian, he would be familiar with the story of Jesus and the woman taken in adultery. And if he were a father, he would know that oftentimes our children do indeed wax rebellious and pass through a period in which they live in the far country before they come back to themselves and become the people that we knew they could be all along. I'm speaking from personal experience. I'm going to tell you what, when I was raising my son, there was a time when he was so stubborn and rebellious that we had a hard time living under the same roof. I think he would say exactly the same thing. And yet today, he is one of my very best friends. And I told him recently, after being with him in Boston, that he is a far better father than ever I have been. You know, writing back in the 18th century, Bishop Spangenberg gave encouragement to parents of stubborn and rebellious children. He said, "It's almost natural for the children of Christian parents to spend a time in rebellion. But," he said, "we have a promise for those children, especially when we have dedicated them to God in baptism. And after that period in rebellion, they invariably return to their roots." It's almost like Proverbs 22. You know, we read in Proverbs 22, "Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old," that's an interesting phrase, "when he is old, he will not depart from it." It may be that in those middle years, until he attains age and maturity, he will indeed depart. But we do have a promise. Now, I'm willing to bet that some of you were surprised by that commandment in Deuteronomy 21 to take our rebellious children to the elders, to have them stoned. I wonder how many of you have read all 613 commandments attributed to Moses. If you will read through them, I will wager that you will make two observations, and then those observations will raise for you two questions. The first observation you will make is that some of those commandments are still very pertinent for us today, and we have based our lives and the life of our society upon them. Take the Ten Commandments, for instance. I will wager that most of you have them displayed somewhere in your home. Some of you may even have them as a sticker on the back glass of your automobile. And if put to it, I believe using the 10 fingers of your 2 hands, you could recite them. And even if you cannot recite them, I will wager that they are so ingrained in you that you know them intuitively and that you live by them. Of course, if you read through all 613 commandments, I'm pretty sure that some of you will say, "Well, this has no relevance for me at all. This commandment has no relevance. This commandment has no relevance. This commandment has no relevance." And either wittingly or unwittingly, you ignore those commandments. Each of you has ignored at least one commandment this day. If you did not worship on the Sabbath, which was yesterday, and I'll wager that a great many of us have ignored a number of other commandments already this morning. For instance, how many of you had either bacon or sausage for breakfast this morning? Could I see a hand? If you did, you ignored the commandment of Moses not to eat the meat of an animal that splits the hoof. Now, some of you think you've gotten off lightly, but I wonder how many of you are wearing a garment this morning, any garment at all, that is made with a blended fabric, despite the fact that Moses commanded that you should not. We're going to have a revival based on blended fabrics. Now you laugh, but in James, the 2nd chapter, verse 10, we read, "Listen, he who keeps the law in all points, but violates the law in one point, is guilty of all." And yet, we laugh. And because we do, that gives rise to two questions. First, we might well ask, Why did God lay these burdensome commandments upon the Jews? And I think there's two answers to that question. On the one hand, I think God laid those burdensome commandments, those commandments and ordinances. He forbade them to eat certain foods. He told them they had to dress a certain way in order to be His witnesses in the world, because by their very oddity, they were powerful witnesses for Him. That's still true today. Not long ago, my son met with some representatives from a large firm in New York, for which his firm, the firm that he works for in Boston, is doing some design work. He said when he got there, he was totally shocked because they were all Orthodox Jews. They were all dressed in black, and they all had these little skull caps on. And they all had sideburns that dangled in tight curls down their faces and hung below their chins. And he said, "Dad, when I first saw them, I was tempted to laugh. And then it occurred to me how seriously they take their faith. They are a powerful witness to God." So on the one hand, it matters because God wanted the Jews to be His witnesses in the world. On the other hand, it mattered because God used this law to create from Israel a people so strong they could withstand anything the world might throw at them. Because think about it. The Jews have had about a 3,000-year history, perhaps a little longer. But for 2,000 of those years, they were completely without a homeland. And yet, because they had the law, they continued to exist as a people. Think of it like this. They had a constitution without a homeland, and the constitution proved enough. It kept them together despite the worst that the world could do against them. Because in many countries, they were second-class citizens. In many countries, they were driven from their homes. Their wealth was stolen. In the Spanish Inquisition, thousands of them were put to death. In Hitler's Germany, 6 million of them died. And yet today, they still exist as a nation. Now they have a homeland, but even Jews who do not live in the homeland are conscious of their Jewishness because they have the law. And more than that, we read in both Testaments, the Old and the New, that God still has a purpose for them. So that's why God gave the Jews the law with all those commandments and ordinances. But a second question now arises. And that question is, are we bound by the law of Moses? And I would answer, well, we are. And we aren't. We're certainly bound by the Ten Commandments and by the moral law. Though the moral law was not universally recognized, it was always intended by God that it be universal. I think that that moral law has been written on our hearts, and it's not so much that we break the moral laws of God as that we break ourselves upon the moral laws of God. However, in another way, they don't bind us. Because we also have all those commandments and ordinances, those odd little commandments by which God set the Jewish people apart, and they no longer apply to us. We know this from Ephesians, the second chapter. In Ephesians, the second chapter, the apostle says that the time for the kind of distinction brought about by the laws of commandments and ordinances has come to an end. He writes that the Jew was one man and the Gentile was another man, but that Christ has abolished in His flesh the law of commandments and ordinances, that He might create one new man in place of the two, making peace and reconciling us both to God by His cross. Today, our relationship with God is not marked by the way we keep those commandments and ordinances. Today, our relationship with God is marked by our relationship with Jesus Christ. In other words, we Christians have a freedom under the law that the ancient Jews did.